Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net. He's out of McHenry, Illinois. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker is at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You can always find us and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like on the web at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, or in any of your favorite applications for podcast, including iTunes, the Google Play Store. We're in Stitcher. We're now in Spotify, SoundCloud, and of course the NPR One app. Let's start by getting a list of items that we ought to discuss for the day. I think Jim McCormick will begin with you.
Well, I think probably the first thing probably I'll discuss, Todd, is the trade talks with Trump and the Chinese delegation at the White House today. And there's been a lot of optimism that maybe we're going to make some progress here, and we'll see if we can finally get this trade deal across the goal line.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
I'd like to talk about corn and see if we have any possibility of recovering all the losses we had from last Friday's report.
And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
How about doing away with USDA's crop report?
Okay, I will. I don't know whether I want to take that up or not, but why not? We'll let you talk about that. Is there a reason that you think it would be worthwhile to do away with these reports?
I don't know if we need to do away with all of them, but I think you could probably cut them in half real quick. We got way too many reports. You know, I got 3-4 reports a week. You know, different smaller ones. Then you got the monthly reports, and you got supply demand reports. And if there was ever an argument to do away with them, I think last Friday is a good reason. I mean, if USDA can't give out accurate information, then there's a question whether or not how worthwhile they are, because they misled the trade tremendously on their delayed January report. And then all of a sudden they come back, oh, we made a mistake here. And threw the trade a complete curveball. So unless they can get better at it, I think they need to stop trying to fine-tune the yield. They come out and say the yield's going to be 174 or 178 or 180. Why don't they just put the ranges out there? I know the trade will gravitate to the mid-range, but some people may say, no, I think the low range is right, or others will think maybe the high range is right. But I think the trade with the USDA coming out with specific yield numbers is the way their track record is after last Friday. I think they need to reevaluate everything, because they're misleading the trade, and when they mislead the trade, they mislead the market. And the function of the market is to discover price. And if it's being fed a garbage information, it's not discovering price correctly.
And in defense of the United States Department of Agriculture, the numbers that were released for the grain stocks figures, which I think is the numbers that you're worried about at this point, were a census, relatively speaking, of the 8,500 places that store corn and other crops around the United States. And then they compare that to what their yields were last fall, and you're suggesting that maybe just the range would be a better option, and then we'd use the census, as those numbers really have to be fairly good. I don't know whether Jim McCormick or Chuck Shelby, if either one of you want to jump in on those, but well, go ahead.
I'll jump in, Todd. I mean, I think he's got a point. I mean, for me, the frustration was, you know, they do this quarterly census, and in a way, I understand why they do it, because we know how much corn we're going to use for ethanol. We know how much corn we're exporting, but we don't know what the feed is. And this is where this census is supposed to kind of give us a better estimate of where the feed usage is. But what I found incredibly frustrating is, like you said, the obviously that last quarter report was all delayed due to the government shutdown. So that census and all that was done at the end of January, beginning of February. This census was done literally 30, 35 days later. How the heck do you miss it by 270 million bushels in 30, 35 days? So which number is right? Is it the one that we just got last Friday, or is it the one we got the month before? I mean, and like you said, the confidence of the trade gets less and less, which just gives us more and more volatility. But I know I was incredibly frustrated when that number came out, as well as all my customers were.
The government information on that stocks report was collected on December 1st. So it was already gathered and in envelopes someplace, you know, in the United States before the government even shut down. So that should have not, the government shutdown should have had nothing to do with altering their numbers, because the data was collected on December 1st. It was as of December 1st. And the government didn't shut down until about Christmas time or thereabouts. So they had ample time to get all of their data collected. Now, whether it stayed in the state offices or whether or not that was forwarded on to the U.S., the Washington offices before the government shut down. But I don't think you can blame the government shutdown for USDA's misses. And the December 1st stocks number was also a census number. So we're talking about, then we're saying that their December 1st census number was wrong if this one was right. So, but that's as my, and then I think the planning intentions report tells you that there's another big surprise coming come June, because where did all these acres go? We know that they're going to get planted, because we have incentives to plant the acres. You got crop insurance and you got a safety net, and these acres are going to get planted. They're not just going to go to hay or they're going to be go to weeds. I mean, they're going to be planted. So there's some big numbers coming at us in June yet.
Yeah, so a couple of things, and I can recall Daryl Good, ag economist here at the University of Illinois, telling me oftentimes that the first one and the last one of the year of the grain stocks numbers for corn in particular, the December and then the September one, were usually pretty good. But the two in between, the March and particularly the June, were oddballs. And a lot of it had to do with how much grain was stored off or on farm rather than off farm. And so while there were 8,500...
This is Lance Honig. I'm chief of the crops branch for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Well, you know, there's been a couple of general comments out over the last week or so since the reports came out on Friday. Grain stocks got a lot of attention, obviously a bit of a surprise with some of the numbers there. And I think just it's a good idea, I think, just to remind folks exactly where that information comes from. Obviously, there's two components to the stocks estimates. You've got your on-farm and you've got your off-farm, and they come from separate sources. The on-farm comes directly from the producers. We surveyed about 83,000 farmers roughly the first 2 weeks of March, but we asked them to report to us the quantity of their grains and oil seeds that were stored on their farms as of March the 1st. So that's the reporting by the producers, what they're holding on their farms at the beginning of the month. And then, of course, the off-farm piece, separate component there. That's, you know, the quantities that are stored at those commercial facilities. And there's about 8,500 of those, and we go to all of them. So it's, you know, nearly a complete census for that component of the stocks. And that's what we report. We report the quantities that were stored as of the first. We do look at the balance sheet. We understand some of the implications of that. But our job is to report what's on hand as of the first of the month. And we base that on those individuals that are holding those stocks. And that's what we did. The second report, obviously, that came out, the prospective planning, some surprises there, too. And again, 83,000 producers, we're asking them to tell us what they expect to plant this year. And that's what it is at this point. It's intentions, expectations, whatever word you want to use. It's what farmers were thinking when we interviewed them roughly the first 2 weeks of March. Now, obviously, a lot of things can change between that time and the time they get in the field, maybe even more things this year than some years. And obviously, that's why we go back in June. Once planting is either complete or nearly complete, and we get an update from them as to what they actually did plant. So, again, those are intentions. And based on what the farmers were thinking when we interviewed them, the numbers that were in the report on Friday are just a reflection of what the farmers were intending.
Grain was stored off or on farm rather than off farm. And so while there were 8,500, and that's the number I think that I have heard from USDA recently, that were of these facilities, and they would have all been elevators and other such facilities that report, there was an awful lot of grain that is stored on farm, and that producers aren't particularly good sometimes at picking their numbers up. So there may, Chuck Shelby, still be some changes yet in these grain stocks numbers, I suppose.
Well, when you look at the ultimate answer to the producer and the folks we're talking to here today, ultimately the numbers they throw out there are the numbers we have to deal with. And the other, I guess, unfortunate part, or part we have to deal with, is what the trading funds, commodity funds, do with these reports. And that was the unfortunate thing about last Friday. The algorithms hammered the market down. And generally, I think what those funds do is drive it too far one way or the other. So maybe we can get past some of this. I think the biggest factor now is what kind of weather do we have going forward as far as what corn acres are really going to be, or when this gets in the ground, and maybe give us an opportunity to recover some of this, give us some opportunities maybe to, you know, make some sales of old crop and new crop as we look forward.
Can we recover it all?
I would think so if we could get some good news on some kind of China deal. The funds are heavily short. That wouldn't mean that they get out of all their positions. It would just mean that they get out a part of them. And get back to where we started this from last Friday on the break.
I was going to say, I think we can recover? Yeah, I look for us to recover. The funds have this record short position. If you look historically, they do rotate out of it eventually. They try to lock in the profits. They want to get paid. And I think they will happen. I think the China deal will be hopefully be the impetus that'll do it. We do need something with that number. We could argue if we like it or not. It looks like the carryout's going to creep over $2 billion on this upcoming crop report is our estimate. And we're going to need some help. We've got to show some demand here now that we found these extra bushels. But, we want to buy metric tons of corn. It's hard telling how much they may buy or when they may buy it, but if they would buy it, hopefully that's the fuel that will cause these funds to shake out of the short and give us a spring rally that everyone is hoping we will have.
Well, I have another question to follow up with you on that, Jim. Are we too far into this marketing year to make very much of a difference? And I'll ask that separately for soybeans and for corn.
I think in the big picture, to really change the balance sheet dramatically, we probably are, because to get it all loaded out and shipped. But I think what will happen, though, Todd, is it's just going to be more the psychological impact. Like they were saying, the funds tend to take this too hard one way or the other, either selling or buying. So just the impetus of them getting out could force this market to go higher. Even though it really have a dramatic increase in the carryout one way or the other, just the momentum could be enough to move the market, I believe.
Where do we stand in our cycles at this time?
Seasonal cycle still has room to, regroup and try to put together some kind of rally as we, maybe get into May, June, July. I think on the short run, cycles, the way I'm looking at it, I don't really look for corn to do a whole lot until we get, past the first week of May. Current chart pattern, it's kind of hard to read that after you have a big hard down day like that. And what we've been doing is just kind of climbing up here this week. So I don't know if that's a bear flag or if it's a legitimate recovery rally, but I think corn still has vulnerabilities into the first week of May or so. And then I think after that, then corn, I think, will probably begin to maybe try to find a reason to rally, and that may be because of planting delays or something like that. It may be because of a China deal. Maybe there'll be better demand than what we think. But it's going to be real hard to get something going very strong on the upside because our overall supplies are too large. And that's just, I mean, the only way to change that is if you get into a full-fledged weather market where we're really talking about severe production cutbacks because of weather, then old crop supplies don't mean anything. It's all about, you know, how big the new crop is or how small the new crop is. And we're a long ways away from worrying about that yet.
It seems like that should be the case, though. Chuck Shelby, I want to ask you a little bit about that. We've been awfully wet. Farmers probably aren't terribly worried at this point, but if they look at the forecast and see several clippers running across the whole of the central part of the United States, that will continue to keep producers out of the field because there simply won't be that much drying time in between them. How soon do we get worried?
Well, I think it's a function of that report last week, Todd. When you look out what states are really going to grow their corn acres and decrease their soybean acres, it's North Dakota, South Dakota. You look at Nebraska, you look at Iowa. Those are the states that are, you know, fighting the weather a lot worse than we are here in the Eastern Corn Belt. So I think that's one of the good things we can look at in the Eastern Corn Belt. We're kind of ready to go. It's still kind of wet, but as we know, producers can really do a lot. But I look at the key to the market is what the Western guys and their weather and the folks out there, I think they're certainly, what I talk to the guys out there, they're a month away to 5 weeks away from even thinking about having an opportunity to get in the field. So that's where your planting delays are really going to show up. I think here in the East, we're going to be on a pretty good pace, and we can catch up pretty quickly if we just have a week of, you know, nice, decent weather.
Well, so we have a whole lot of extra acres that will be going in parts of those areas. Let's see, South Dakota is up 113% in their corn acres for this year versus last year. North Dakota is 129%. These are not small changes in the marketplace. Do you think that the producers will not put corn in if they're delayed long enough?
Well, I think it's certainly a consideration, and I think what we'll see is prevent plant last year is very low compared to history. I think coming up in 2019, prevent plant acres are going to go up pretty dramatically. We certainly look down into Nebraska area and western Iowa, you could have 1 million acres just, you know, prevent plant for those guys in those areas that just have been devastated by flooding. So prevent plant will go up, and I think it could be a late enough season for the North Dakota, South Dakota farmer that there will be some switching back to beans away from corn.
How many prevent plant acres do you think there will be?
I think easily you go up 1 million more than last year. And if you knock 1 million off, you know, 92.8, it gets you down to a more reasonable number. And then if we can get another 500,000 to 750,000 switching from corn to beans because of the lateness of the season, then, you know, you're going to get corn acres in a better balance that gives you some better opportunities to have a little firmer corn market.
It's all a matter of trying to build a friendly scenario, and it doesn't look like an easy task that you're working through, Chuck, or any of you for that matter.
Just trying to say there's some reason for the corn market to recover from where it is, you know, after the, you know, devastating blow we got from USDA on acres and carryout.
Yeah, but you still got, what, 3 to 4 million acres that supposedly we don't know what it's going to?
If we're going to believe USDA on one side, Dan, you know, I mean, I know where you're coming from, but I think there's a lot of acres out there that guys were planting when prices were higher, and they're finally to the point of saying, well, this acreage over here has just not been, you know, productive enough at these price levels that it's just not worth, you know, going in there and small planting this area. Just, you know, it's just not economically make enough sense for the farmers to plant some of those areas.
That may be the case. It's pretty cheap to put in an acre of soybeans, though.
I would say the soybeans are surprisingly strong to me, considering, you know, the carryout we got, and I just have a hard time believing with the cost to plant corn and, you know, higher interest rates for farmers who borrow money to plant, put out a crop, that, you know, bean acres are as low as USDA has them. But I would agree with you, they're going to go to beans. It makes any sense in those acres rather than corn.
Right. Well, doesn't crop insurance encourage you to plant them? I mean, that's the, that's the thing that keeps people planting corn and soybeans is the crop insurance. So just go ahead and plant it for, if it has a good crop, they luck out. If it doesn't have a crop, then they collect on the crop insurance.
Well, it would stimulate me probably to take Prevent Plant on corn, but I don't know that a lot of guys farm for crop insurance. I mean, it's certainly a component to have a safety net underneath you, but it takes a lot more dollars to put out a corn crop, even though, you know, you can look at your insurance and say, well, yeah, you got a, you know, a revenue source there, but it takes a lot more money and a lot more, you know, input cost to go out and plant an acre of corn.
Yeah, so they're not putting beans in the ground in the Dakotas, either one of them, because the PNW has been closed. And I suppose the only way, maybe, Jim McCormick, and you've brought this up, that that could change would seem to be if some kind of deal is struck with the Chinese.
I mean, who knows what the numbers are? I mean, I've heard numbers today that they said this deal could lock in as many as 40 million metric tons of U.S. beans. If I think that's part of the reason that you saw such a big acreage shift for those producers when they did this survey back at, you know, back to the beginning of March. They're all stuck with all last year's beans. They don't want to plant a second bean crop, and they literally got a bean crop sitting in the bin. But if Trump can pull off a deal here in the next few weeks and really get China to commit to open up the market, the beans are the cheap one to plant. Fiscally, everyone is very, very tight from what I'm talking to most banks and all that. Money is very, very tight. I got to think they'll lean to plant beans when it's all said and done, and the corn acres will come down and the bean acres will come up and kind of get close in line with what the trade was actually thinking before the numbers came out when it's all said. I just think those guys, they want to plant corn, but I think the reality is they're going to plant beans.
I'm wondering about that. If you've got a year's worth of beans, and clearly they probably do. They've got enough storage. The Western Corn Belt, historically, I think, has had a lot more storage than we have given them credit for and than we have had in the Eastern Corn Belt. They have a lot of ethanol plants. They're planning to put a whole lot more corn in. Do you really think they can be stimulated to put bean acres in? It seems like a hard pull to me.
Well, I don't know if it's a stimulated. I think it's as simple as this. Can you afford to plant corn? I mean, you've got to the situation. I know of a producer that runs 10,000 acres that his bank pretty much said, you can't afford to plant corn. So he's planting 10,000 acres of beans. They're going all beans because that's all he can afford to do because that's all the money he has. Now you got those poor guys up in North Dakota. They have no money. The cash basis is still bad. They may not want to plant beans. They may want to plant corn, Todd. But the question is, did their banker say, I give you enough money to plant corn. Can you afford to plant corn is the question. You know, do they have enough equity to borrow to plant corn? That's the question a lot of people are asking, in my opinion. We really don't know.
Well, the question, hasn't it been answered already by the survey? I mean, clearly they must believe they've got enough money to put a corn crop in both North and South Dakota.
If you could combine weather we're talking about, and if you could combine a deal with China, that might be enough of a catalyst to, you know, accomplish the switch we're talking about. Not talking about radical switch. We're just talking about enough of a switch between that and the acres that are flooded out that you could make a switch there. It'd be an easy thing to do, I think, for some of the guys.
Well, we're talking maybe, 600,000 acres. There's 1.3 or something like that that's up in corn in those areas.
Well, the other thing, Todd, you got to remember, like I always tell people when I speak, when I go out to speak to people, when you ask, classic example, if I come in there and you got an E and you're running 50-50, I know you farm, you guys farm, and you run 50-50 rotation, half beans, half corn, okay? And then all of a sudden, this year, you're going all beans. Would you admit that to people? Because what's the first thing that pops in people's heads when people go, well, you know, Todd and his family's at 50-50 rotation. They're now at all beans. Why'd they go that route? Can they afford to plant corn? That's usually the first thing that pops in people's minds. So a lot of people, if they are going all beans, they will not admit it to the very end because it's frustrating. They don't want to admit it. So I don't, you know, maybe, you know, so these numbers I think are very flexible up there. And like I said, I think that's what they wanted to do is plant corn. I just don't think they're going to be able to afford to plant it. And the weather may not allow it as well.
Man, June 28th could be a lot of fun between a new grain stocks report and an acreage update.
Well, one thing we got to keep in mind, land cost is not equal all over the Corn Belt. And I think the Plain States, their land cost is much cheaper than what the land cost here is when you get into like Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana, and Ohio. I think you get land costs per acre, land costs in the Dakotas, all the way up into Manitoba, and Nebraska is going to be significantly lower per acre. So their cost of production in many cases is much cheaper than what the cost of production is for an Illinois farmer, even though he's got a higher yield potential.
In the long run, if it's the middle of May and planting is way behind out west, I mean, I think that's the key factor to me, is if we're really delayed and they're not getting much done and it's middle of May heading toward the end of May, I think you're going to see, you know, some changes or switching at that point.
So there may be a lot of acres at that point too. I mean, there could be spring wheat acres that are available that didn't get planted, corn acres that didn't get planted. There could be an incredible number of acres that if it's really that wet.
Well, I have a feeling we're going to go into a dry spell.
The other thing that adds a lot of stuff to this, Todd, is a lot of the fall tillage didn't get done around the country. It was so wet. So a lot of guys that maybe would have been a little bit more committed to corn because they'd already put the fertilizer on in the fall, they've got to do the spring tillage this year. So I think there's a little bit more ground up for debate. You know, if China comes in and does cut a deal and beans explode higher for some reason, it may buy a lot of bean acres instantaneously, or vice versa, the corn. If they come in and do commit and buy a lot of corn and the corn market reacts positively and we get, you know, all of a sudden get corn up to 425, I mean, there's just a lot of things that are at play over the next 6 weeks. It could get really interesting between now and Memorial Day weekend, let's say.
Turn your attention to the south very quickly. What do we know about the Delta region? I think, Chuck, that they're way behind still.
Yeah, I think that's going to show up. We're going to start seeing planting progress next week for corn. And I think the trade's, you know, looking for something or going to hone in on that. That seems to be the answer. As we go forward, it's going to lag behind, and that's the catalyst here. And I think it's absolutely right. If we saw a corn rally or a bean rally at this point because we're going to be late, that can change opinions of what guys are going to do. It could seem like guys to really try to plant corn if corn took off, but on the other hand, if the beans take off and start moving at this late, you know, or behind on planting, then you're going to see guys go to which commodity, you know, wants to run. And it'd be nice to see beans run, because that's going to be an easy switch over to bean acres from corn.
I think it's time to wrap it up here. Let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Dan Zwicker, I will start with you.
I guess I don't know where to start, I guess, after our discussion. But I find it awful interesting that the funds were carrying a very, very huge short position going into USDA's report, and they ended up just making a killing on it. If one didn't know better, you thought that they had the numbers.
Jim McCormick, what is your set of final thoughts?
Hey, my final thoughts would be for producers out there to, kind of get a game plan of what you want to do if we have an opportunity. I think we all have kind of stated we're hopeful that maybe something will kind of unfold a nice little spring rally here. But make sure the producers out there, make sure you don't get bowled up. You've been looking for a rally to sell into. When you get the rally, don't change your mind. Our recommendation is look for this rally to lock in profits and be on the defensive side. I mean, the one thing we learned about the last 6 months, rallies can be fleeting. So if we have this opportunity, and I do believe we'll get one, and then sooner than later, be prepared to take advantage of it.
And Chuck Shelby, your final thoughts.
Well, these markets going into the spring of 19 are one of the most, I guess, volatile and interesting and unique set of events that are going to impact our prices. So from the producer's standpoint, be prepared for anything. Try to have some flexibility built into your plan, and we'll see how this all plays out in the next 30, 60 days are going to be real interesting.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas, and Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net out of McHenry, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.